So we're sitting with Bob Moody, who is music director just about everywhere now. Where aren't you conducting? That might be the easier question. You mentioned on the way in that you're now with Memphis is the latest?
Yes. We announced a few months ago that starting with the 16-17 season, I become music director of the Memphis Symphony. So I have at the moment, and for a few years, I will have three orchestras, the Portland Symphony in Maine, the Winston-Salem Symphony in North Carolina, and the Memphis Symphony. I've also announced that at the end of 2018, I will finish my tenure with the Portland Symphony. So it's not as completely crazy as it sounds. There's a bit of a transition happening. And, of course, most important for me and maybe for this conversation is my incredible chance to come to the Valley every year as artistic director of Arizona Music Fest. And, you know, they're going to have to pull that one from my cold, dead hands. This is just too amazing of a festival and too phenomenal of an orchestra to...
Well, and you've built on it so much.
Well, we're proud of that. We're very proud of sort of the makeup of this orchestra. And this year, I've said this for many years going, and this year, again, what a sort of quantum leap we've made in sort of the star power from, meaning players from top orchestras around the world. We're adding to the list of some of the phenomenal players we've always had from Chicago Symphony, Cleveland Orchestra, San Francisco Symphony, the Met, etc. We're adding this year, for example, the principal trumpet of the Chicago Symphony, principal piccolo of the Chicago Symphony, principal second violin of the Cleveland Orchestra, principal bassoon of the Montreal Symphony, principal trombone of the Toronto Symphony. It's crazy, and I think people may know by now, but our concertmaster, who this is his third year as our concertmaster, Frank Wong, has just been named concertmaster of the New York Philharmonic. So it ain't half bad conducting this orchestra, I can tell you.
I'll follow up with that by saying if you go to the website, azmusicfest.org, there's an archive of sound. The most recent, I think, is 2013, but I was listening to the Bartok Concerto for Orchestra.
Yes, yes.
The Beethoven Violin Concerto.
Yes, that's right.
That Central Sound at 8 recorded.
That's right.
Fantastic sound.
Yeah, and the Beethoven is with Christoph Kontz, who is principal second violin of the Vienna Philharmonic, and he's a member of our family. In fact, we're looking to have him back as a member of the orchestra next season, as well as his brother Stefan, who is a cellist in the Berlin Philharmonic. So it's this is, you know, I got to pinch myself sometimes that I get to conduct this group in a festival setting.
I just want to make sure that the people here in town realize, you say AZ Music Fest, oh, that's great. No, it is. It's fantastic. I'm glad to hear you're staying too, because I should say it's radio. So I'm gonna disclose that you come in today and it's February. What is it? The 15th.
Yes.
You're wearing shorts and a short sleeve shirt. Portland, Maine's a lot colder than it is here.
So. Exactly. And when I spend a lot of time in the Northeast in the winter, I'm not going to miss a single chance to put on shorts when I come out here and just enjoy this weather. I guess I can't do it for concerts, but otherwise.
That would be bad for
yeah.
him. Yeah. Even yeah. as relaxed as we are here, that would be bad for him. So the festival has, of course, many components, Broadway sections. There's folk music. There's jazz, all sorts of things happening. You're kicking now into the more classical-oriented, which is why K-Bach wants to talk to you.
Yeah.
And your first concert, I guess, will be on Monday, or Tuesday, right?
Tuesday.
The 23rd. But between then and now, you're bringing a young string quartet to town. Well, how'd this come about?
Yeah, so we have as you said, the festival sort of has several pillars. The key pillar is the classical music portion, the incredible festival orchestra. Plus, we always try to make sure we have a number of strong chamber events, whether that's piano recital or duo recital or string quartet. This year, we're bringing the Kalydor Quartet, and really, they are here because I was traveling somewhere about a year and a half ago. I was guest conducting somewhere. I cannot remember the airport, but sitting in the airport lounge, I see this young, you know, foursome walk past me, and they have four cases that clearly look like two violins, a viola, and a cello. So I walked over to them. They sat down at, you know, the food court or something, and I walked over and said, string quartet? And they said, yep, string quartet. And I said, well, I'm a musician as well, and who are you? And we got to talking, and they're this phenomenal quartet. They were all students together at the Colburn School out in California, and when they left there, they formed this quartet, and really, they're now playing to national, international acclaim, and it was so nice to have that happen just by a chance, you know, food court run-in at an airport, so that's how they're here.
It's not enough you get to know everybody by conducting them, or, you know, You got to run into the airport, too. That's
well, and when I think about programming and when I think about guest artists, I have to say I have a lot of stories that are like that. Somehow you hear a snippet of something on the radio and you know, back in the days before you could read the screen in your car and find out the piece and the artist, I used to sort of pull the car over and wait for you or someone to announce and tell me who I just heard. And then I would sort of, you know, look that person up. So there, I think as a conductor, you spend a lot of time just trying to make sure your feelers are out there. You're just always curious as to what other artists or repertory that you don't know about might exist.
Yeah, and I think they just this last spring or summer made their Carnegie Hall debut.
That's exactly right, yeah.
So when you're going to be out and back in time this weekend for rehearsals, right?
Yes, I'm talking to you now, and then I run away from the Valley to go conduct the Memphis Symphony, my new orchestra, and then I'll be back to town, and we are off and running. The festival orchestra, they all fly in either Sunday night or Monday morning. We have rehearsals starting Monday late morning, and it's Mozart 25 and a phenomenal new work to celebrate our 25th anniversary, and Mahler First on Tuesday night.
It's testament to the quality of musician that you all are, that you get together a couple of times and then boom, let's do this. But Mozart 25th and Mahler, the Titan Symphony, which, you know, I know it's the easy Mahler, but I've never, ever fallen out of love with that. I think on every performance of that that's ever been recorded.
Well, we started discussing what we should do to celebrate the 25th anniversary. For the 20th anniversary, 5 years ago, we did Beethoven 9. For the 25th, I felt that the orchestra had finally grown not only artistically, but also just numbers. We now have a larger string section. We really are a full-sized symphony orchestra from their beginnings 25 years ago as, you know, a 14-piece chamber orchestra. So that's sort of the course we've taken. And I thought, yeah, let's take on a Mahler symphony. And for me personally, it's hard to say what is your favorite Mahler symphony, but I will tell this story that when I was a teenager living in South Carolina, I went on a field trip with my high school for the arts. And the field trip was to see this orchestra called the Chicago Symphony play Mahler First with this guy named George Schulte. I was 16. It was 1983. I will tell you honestly, I presumed, I was in South Carolina, I didn't come from a classical music family. Sure, I presumed Chicago had a symphony. I mean, Greenville, South Carolina had a symphony, so surely Chicago would. That made sense. I'd never heard of this guy, you know, George Schulte, as I kept calling him. But I got to the concert, and at the end, if people know the members of the brass, Mahler asks to stand on the final several bars of the piece. And when they stood, I started crying. And I've had... That was one of the key moments in my youth that made me think, I have to do this for my life. I looked at that, now I know, one of the greatest conductors of all time, and I was pointing at that guy going, I want to do that. So choosing Mahler 1 to celebrate the 25th was very easy. Mozart 25, the number, that's pretty obvious. But also, you know, Mahler has more than once in his symphonies recommends that you open before one of his symphonies with a light work. He often says perhaps something by Michael Haydn he has specifically referenced in his writings. But Mozart, we're in that era of that sort of Haydn, Mozart-type music. And then we actually had a commission. We looked for young Arizona composers. The rule was you had to be an Arizonan and you had to be under 30 years old. We had a contest and several submissions and an amazing young composer who is from Arizona, Michael Markowski, won the competition, and we're going to play a piece of his called Joyride to actually kick off the concert.
Wow.
So I'm very happy about that we played this role and put this into the 25th anniversary.
Very cool.
Yeah.
So that that concert behind you, then you move on and welcome Joshua Bell to town for the 25th anniversary.
Yeah, and we're in more locations now. So the Mahler First is where people expect us to be over the years, Pinnacle Presbyterian. We're actually now moving our concerts, some of them, to just south of the 101. We're going to be at Casa de Cristo Lutheran Church, which is sort of just just west of Scottsdale Road, just south of the 101. And a wonderful space, and Josh Bell's coming. He's going to play Brook Violin Concerto. We're doing Dvorak's 7th Symphony. It's one that I seem to be obsessing over these days. It's key on my radar right now. I'm conducting it a lot these days. And then a piece by Mason Bates. Mason Bates was our composer in residence here 6 years ago. Mason, if people don't know, has just finished a five-year stint as composer-in-residence for the Chicago Symphony. He's now the first ever named composer-in-residence for the Kennedy Center, both Washington National Opera and National Symphony. And his first opera has been commissioned by Santa Fe Opera. It will premiere in 2017. It's based on the life of Steve Jobs. So he wrote a piece called Garages of the Valley, which is a wonderful piece, kind of connected to the Steve Jobs idea. He's sort of saluting the Valley, the Silicon Valley area now, as it's called, where back in the 1970s, all these guys who were clearly geniuses were working out of their garages trying to create these things that we now, they're second nature to us to say words like Apple and Macintosh and Google and Microsoft. But back then, these were just ideas in someone's garage. And the music sort of displays this this era of discovery. So
Mason Bates should be familiar to audiences, I would hope, because he's just written some great stuff. I remember the Phoenix Symphony when Herman Michael was here.
That's right.
They had that year.
All Beethoven symphonies.
And a new piece on every concert.
Correct.
And I remember being blown away by this guy.
Yep. Know,
and what a dynamic young guy he was, and so just a great guy.
We commissioned him. So I first met Mason, oddly, when he was 15 years old. I was 25. We've been closest of friends since. I was a groomsman in his wedding. And I often say to Mason, you are my ticket to eternal notoriety. And what I mean by that for me is I'll be a footnote in the biographies that will be written about Mason Bates. Mason is now the second most performed living American composer after John Adams. So it's been amazing to watch this guy, who is my dearest of friends, really become one of the Aaron Copelands, you know, of his generation and of the 21st century.
And for people who don't know, the astonishing thing, how old is Mason Bates?
Mason is now 38, so I gave it away. I'm 48, so we're...
But he's 38.
Yeah.
And I think John Adams is going to be 79, isn't he?
That's right. So what an accomplishment at that point in his life. Yeah.
And Joshua Bell, it's just a celebratory thing to have him play one of the most melodious concertos.
Yeah, and this is not new for us. People might be interested to know that when I first started with the festival 10 years ago, for about 4 years, we sort of brought in a string of great, sort of the upper echelon of guest artists. We had Nadja Sonnenberg, we had Andre Watts, we had Lynn Harrell, and we then moved away from sort of that kind of thing for a while, and now we're moving back in that direction. There's some exciting things that we'll get to tell about the 26th anniversary season as well. But for the 25th, Josh, I've conducted Josh before, not in the Brook. I've conducted him in the Sibelius Concerto. So this is going to be really fun to put this together with him.
Good collaborator?
He's the nicest guy in the world. Yeah, and he's also a fun guy to hang out with, you know, after a concert. And I think the fact that so many players in this orchestra, because they play with him on a fairly regular basis in the New York Phil or Chicago Symphony, he's going to know all of these guys very well. I think he's going to enjoy the winter camp festival that all of us enjoy. He's sort of getting out here to play together.
You're doing something that I've always thought was a great idea. So often orchestra seasons begin with Carmina Burana. And it just seemed like what a tough card to follow, right? But you're winding up the classical season. Is that right?
Yeah. Yeah, so we finished the orchestra week. We finish with the Carmina Burana of Orff. We have we created an Arizona Music Fest festival chorus. Again, for anybody in the Valley who knows me or remembers that I worked for the Phoenix Symphony, that's not going to be any surprising story. I founded the Phoenix Symphony Chorus. I'm very proud of that. And I was a choral major at Eastman. So choral conducting is at the sort of center of my heart and my love for music. We wanted to do something big to celebrate the 25th, and I've done Carmina many times. I've done it many times with a lot of these same singers, you know, when I used to wear the hat of resident conductor for the Phoenix Symphony. But we said, yeah, for the 25th, let's give this a go, and let's hear Carmina with Chris Martin, principal trumpetist of the Chicago Symphony, you know, accompanying us. We've built the chorus up. It's larger than it has been in years past. We have members of the Casa de Cristo church chorus, who are fine singers, joining us. Also some members of the Phoenix chorus are going to be seen up in the chorus as well, so you'll see some familiar faces. The three soloists are Christina Major, Daniel Stein, tenor, and Theo Hoffman, I think one of the most phenomenal up-and-coming baritones. I saw him at St. Louis Opera. I worked with him in a Poulenc Dialogues of the Carmelites last year. People are going to love this baritone. Christina Major, the soprano, is going to be with us on the first half of the concert as well. We're going to play the Dance of the Seven Veils from Salome of Richard Strauss. And then we are going to play the final 17-minute aria. It starts where Salome says, "Es ist kein Laut zu vernehmen," there is no sound to be heard. She's waiting to hear if her request of her stepfather, King Herod, is being carried out. And that is, she's waiting to hear the creation of the head of John the Baptist on a platter, shall we say.
Wow, well put.
And then she sings the most eerie, terrible, awe-inspiring, phenomenal aria to the head of John the Baptist. We shall not have an actual head on a platter. We're not sort of staging this. But this is I've been doing this piece a lot on concerts lately with orchestras, and I find it to be overwhelmingly powerful. And the Strauss is such a great way, honestly, to then set up the mammoth bombast and power of the Carmina in the second half.
I got to add here that it's one of the nicest things about you has always been your programming.
And oh, thank you.
I would never have thought about doing that.
Oh, well, thank you so
but in
much.
My mind's ear, I guess. That's a stroke. That's really something.
Oh, well, thanks. Well, you always, I think, I mean, my thinking is that music directors are hired first and foremost for their conducting, but you keep them for their programming. And my thinking about programming is we have to be, at the same time, keepers of the institution. We have to, like the Louvre or like the Musée d'Orsay or like the, you know, Metropolitan Museum of Art, we have to take the greatest works, which have been known to be the greatest works for hundreds of years, and play them at the highest possible level. We cannot leave them on a shelf. At the same time, we have an equal responsibility to figure out what's next and what else is out there and what's the interesting, funky combination that might just work and sort of take people on a certain journey in the arc of a couple of hours together, sitting together in a room. So I thanks for saying that, but I think most conductors, my colleagues, we spend a lot of time thinking about this concept. What new works are out there? What's something we can do that? What can we bring into the concert hall that's never been brought in before? You know, and sometimes you hit, sometimes you have a hit, and sometimes you have a miss. But there's a lot of fun in experimenting and working on that.
Well, not to blow your head up too big, but you're right. There's that effort made by just about everybody. And when somebody gets too stodgy, somebody nudges them and says, let's try this. And
yeah.
But no, there's just kudos. And now you're doing it in all these different places. So just stay in the valley, for crying out loud.
Well, listen, if the weather stays like this, I'll come out here more and more, I tell you.
So thanks, Bob.
Awesome. Thank you so much.